The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojen Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojen Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbot of the Zen Center in New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
I'd like to start with a quote by Black Hawk, who was a tribal leader of the Sauk tribe. He was a chief, an Indian chief. Constant motion seems more important than waiting. But waiting is the time to prepare, to build up the spirit and be rested and ready. When anxiety grips us, it uses up energy. It wastes our time. Patience creates staying power so that there is no need to retreat, no need to go backward. Much depends on whether our waiting is a pause before going on or an inertia that puts us into a trance. But when the mind, body, and spirit track together as a unit to move mountains, the waiting is only a prelude to action that makes up for any lost time. So I realize I'd like to talk about patience, which I've done a number of times. Can you guess why? I'd like to start with a story. There once was an old practitioner of the way who specialized in the practice of patience. And after many years of hard work, he felt he had reached his goal, the perfection of patience. To announce this fact to the world, he set up a sign outside his hermitage that read, "A nature like ashes." In the Jewish tradition, we would call this chutzpah. One day, a young traveler passing down the road was struck by the unusual sign and stopped to ask its owner what it meant. "It says, 'A nature like ashes,'" the practitioner replied. "I beg your pardon," said the traveler. "Would you mind repeating that?" The sage said, "It reads quite clearly, 'A nature like ashes.'" "Oh," came the reply, "but what does it say?" "It says, 'A nature like ashes.'" "Excuse me," said the youth, "but for some reason I can't quite make out the words. Would you be so kind to read them for me?" "They say," said the old practitioner, with the calm demeanor of a patient man, "a nature like ashes." The conversation continued on in this vein for some hours until quite late in the day, when the traveler said, "Would you be so kind, sir, as to read the sign for me?" The sage, mustering the full force of his patience, said, "It says, 'A nature like ashes,' if you must know." "Yes," the traveler said, "but what does it say, please?" "Damn it," exploded the sage. "I've told you once, I've told you a million times. 'A nature like ashes,' that's what it says." "I see," said the traveler as he took a step up into the air and displayed the resplendent body of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. "And there remains an ember or two in those ashes. Given another 20 years, perhaps they may cool off, good man. You'll have to wait around for a while yet and keep working. In time, we may meet again." I was thinking, parents probably know this well, and
we as a child might know this dialogue quite well. But mom, till she blows, right?
In our own lives, Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, is constantly appearing, providing us many opportunities to practice patience. We are constantly challenged under the most unexpected circumstances. And of course, in our tradition, the bodhisattvas or any of the images on the altar are said to be not external, that they're a way to identify with our true nature, with those qualities, and they're there as a reminder on the altars as we pass them, as we take a moment, as we're crossing a hallway to bow again. Yeah, make that connection with ourself. And patience is the third paramita. The Sanskrit word is kshanti. And paramita, as we chant, is a Sanskrit word as well. Param means the other shore, and ita means to have reached the other shore. And there's another meaning of paramita, which is the very best, the very unsurpassable best. So kshanti, if I'm saying, refers to the very best patience, the very best patience, the unsurpassable patience. So what could this be? What could this be? The very best unsurpassable patience. And when the bodhisattva ideal was developed, there was this list of six unsurpassable ways. If we were in the precepts retreat, we discussed them. Ways that came into being as methods to train ourselves, cultivate our virtues, qualities within us. The six paramitas are giving, morality, or discipline, patience, effort, sometimes called joyful effort, meditation, and wisdom. And it's kind of interesting, the first three, giving, morality, and patience, have to do a lot with our relationship to others. Others are involved in our practice. It's not just about me. It's not just about you. And this is very much the bodhisattva's way to serve others, to actively engage with others, so that we may cross over to the other shore together. And we chant, of course, gate, gate, para, gate, cross over, cross over, cross over to the other shore, from delusion to awakening. I was thinking of the Heart Sutra and that line where it says, with no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance, therefore no fear. With no hindrance in the mind. And therefore no fear. So in that moment, can we just tremble? Just have trembling. With no hindrance in the mind, there's no fear. We can just tremble. It's just a moment of trembling. And that wisdom of the other shore can arrive. But we often make a lot of hindrances on the way about our fear, about our trembling. The Buddha is sometimes called or referred to as he who is able to be patient. And sometimes this life that we're living is called living in the land of patience. We're living in the land of patience. And recently I was speaking to a Dharma friend after the precepts retreat about Kshanti, and they remarked that they felt patience was not a good translation because it didn't fully capture the depth and the breadth of the Sanskrit term. And I said, well, what do you prefer to call it? And they said they prefer to think of Kshanti as acceptance, particularly as it relates to dealing with adversity. Acceptance. It's also translated as forbearance, endurance, tolerance. The characters for patience, the Chinese characters, are an arrow pointing towards your heart, and you're in a corner. So if you can feel that moment of impatience and what's required, that arrow pointing to your heart in the corner. And I think all of these various interpretations point directly at overcoming or meeting, facing directly the anger, the resenting, hating, and the disliking that we hold. Forbearance, endurance, tolerance. Say that the antidote for anger is patience, tolerance. Is this waiting a pause before going on, or an inertia that puts us into a trance? Is this just a staying power so that there's no need to retreat? It's not passive, he says. So whether manifesting in our lives as other people, as ourselves, as situations, or maybe as beliefs we find hard to accept or tolerate, how do we meet these frustrations and difficulties? How do we accept injuries and insults? I remember years ago, I was on office shift, and this was the time where you had to go back to the building to unforward the phones and come back again. So you had to time it. It was a pretty quiet day. And I was in that zone of like, should I go now? It's a little too early. We were in session. Or should I wait a few minutes? And then, you know, so I decide. So then all of a sudden the phone rings, and I was at that threshold of, should I answer it or should I? And I thought, well, the calls have been pretty simple. And somebody wanted to place an order of like 12 items. And I didn't want to be late. It was a shin. I didn't want to be late to the Zendo. So I was like, okay. And I mean, with each one, they would ask me something about it. And I didn't really know a lot about the items. So I was like leafing through the catalog. I was really impatient because I was separate from time now. I was like thinking ahead and getting back to the Zendo on time. So I took the order and I raced over to Dharma Communications like the witch from The Wizard of Oz. You could have heard the music. Da 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 da. Yeah. bike slinking over, ran in, unfored the phones, passed some women in a car on the way up to Dharma Communications. They were making a U-turn. I thought, okay, that's fine, you know. And I'm coming back on my bike, and there's that car parked at the garden. I'm like, oh, for God's sake. And I see them walking around in the garden. This was a very strict time, you know. I was just livid. I parked my bike, and I got off, and I started to yell, hello, hello. Nobody turned around. I was like, Jesus, they're ignoring me. My God, they're in our garden, and I'm like, hello, hello, nothing. So I go in the garden, I get closer, and they turn around with their faces lit up. Yeah, such a beautiful garden. We're deaf. It's so nice to be here. And it's still with me today, the way that stopped me. And all that I had built up about what they were doing and the insult and the injury because I wasn't heard, they couldn't hear. If I had been patient, I would have parked my bike, said hello, not worried about the Zendo, I would get there. But I wasn't. Kshanti also involves our capacity to forgive and pardon these injuries and insults, real or imagined. So in our everyday life, Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, is constantly appearing before us in a thousand guises and challenging us to perfect this paramita. Just think about your day so far. Have you met any Avalokiteshvaras? Perhaps at the coffee service, the toaster? How do we practice when our so-called least favorite person steps into view? Can we step back and welcome them as the Bodhisattva of compassion, who unknowingly, of course, is providing us yet another opportunity of cultivating patience, of cultivating acceptance, tolerance? What can't we tolerate in ourselves? There's another story I like about a merchant named Funda, who one day encountered the Buddha and his disciples. And when he heard the Buddha teach, he was so impressed, he immediately became a disciple. Funda was brilliant and a wonderful person who eventually attained arhatship, that he accomplished his own individual practice. And the story continues. The Buddha instructed Funda to go to the people and to expound the teachings. And he assigned Funda to Mount Tremper and said to him, those people living there are rough, mean people. If they insult you, what are you going to do? And Funda told Buddha, I will consider them to be good people because they don't kick or hit me. And Buddha said, if they kick or hit you, how are you going to react? And Funda said, I will still think they're good people because they don't beat me with a stick or throw stones. And Buddha went on, well, if they throw stones and beat you with a stick, what will you do? I will still think they're good people because they don't injure me with a dagger or knife, Funda replied. Then the Buddha said, if they do that, how will you react? And Funda said, I will still think they're good people because they don't kill me. And finally, Buddha asked, if they're going to kill you, what will you do? And Funda replied, I will still appreciate them. Among your disciples are many who are willing to die, willing to end their lives because life is so painful. If they are going to take my life, I will be glad to let them. And Buddha said, if you have that much patience, your mission will be successful. And indeed, according to the story, Funda did afterwards, soon after, had some 500 followers. But what about us? Just a small insult can give rise to such big upsets. We might carry it around for a long time, wasting this precious energy for holding on, for fueling the fire, keeping it all going. When we call on forbearance in the face of insult and injury without reacting, it frees up our energy so that we can respond creatively. That's that pinning where we can call on our patience. And then you'll see that other shore arise. We're freed up for that moment to respond creatively. Now these words, forbearance, tolerance, patience, may seem passive to us, as though it's a passive practice. But in fact, it has this staying power and gives us a chance to actively engage dealing with our frustrations and anger. Not only does Avalokiteshvara appear before us, but we are. We are Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. So how does this Bodhisattva train? And this story of Funda brought to mind various teachers. Brought to mind Daido Roshi, closer to home. When I reflect on all the insults and injuries that he had to endure in getting this place started. In this respect, I really admire his incredible patience in very uncertain times. And I wondered, what was he seeing? You know, a person who has this kind of patience has to have a very long, broad view, a broad vision of life. Buddha said, changing the pronouns, the strength of a religious teacher is their patience. They should love all beings and therefore bear with them. Their enemy of today might be a friend, a relative, or a teacher in a previous existence, and therefore should be regarded as a friend today. The strength of a practitioner is their patience. They should love all beings and therefore bear with them. I like this part. Their enemy of today may have been a friend, a relative, or a teacher in a previous existence, and therefore should be regarded as a friend today. So in order to really look at such a statement, we have to open up to its many possibilities. Right? How could we know what we have meant to each other in the past, or will mean to each other in the future? What do we mean to each other now? What do we mean to each other now? The Buddha in the Jataka tales shows his ripening and cultivating his bodhisattva attitude. And he would see, he saw himself in different situations where he might have harmed or defended himself. And then the one who he had harmed or later was the one who was saving him. We never know, do we? What if when we're in impossible situations, we make no excuses, we don't defend, but we simply acknowledge and accept the consequences of whatever we did? What if we remembered that those who cause us pain are enduring the effect of certain causes and are in pain themselves? Everyone we look at is in some kind of pain. What if we remembered and reflect on our own actions and the sticky situations created by those acts? No matter how innocent we might feel in the moment, it's kind of what the Gatha of Atonement asks us to look at, right? And when we encounter painful situations, we might step back and ask some basic questions about our practice. And as the Buddha said, and I'll say, I wouldn't tell you this if I didn't do it. You know, the Buddha said, if I'm telling you something, that means I would do it too, or I've done it. So in those situations, I might ask myself, what am I being given to understand more deeply, to cultivate bodhicitta or my heart, mind? What is there being manifested that I find so difficult to deal with? What happened to that magical display? Is it still a magical display, this difficult thing? Where did that go? What is my intention? What is my vision? And when I've remembered to raise these types of questions in my practice, I learn to keep it light and keep my answers short. Light and short. Don't use the Dharma to beat up on yourselves or make yourself or do this to others. Nor, of course, should we use it to make ourselves feel so proud. We just simply look at our experience. Just look at our experience. There's another story, a famous story about patience in the Lotus Sutra with Jifugyo Bodhisattva. And Jifugyo means never be disrespectful. That's a good name to have. Never be disrespectful. It's a good one to practice. Respect everybody all the time. And in the Lotus Sutra, he's called the Bodhisattva, never disparaging. And to whomever he met, he would say, "You are practicing the way of the Bodhisattva. In the future, you are sure to attain the way." That's what he would say to everyone. "You are practicing the way of the Bodhisattva. In the future, You are sure to attain the way. Well, it's easy to say that to people who are nice to us, but he would say it to anybody, to everybody. And people actually got sick of hearing him say it. And one day they actually threw stones at him and beat him up. Kill this crazy guy, they said. And he ran away, and from a distance he shouted, "You are practicing the way of the Bodhisattva. In the future, you'll become Buddhas." They could hear him. All his life he did this. Imagine the next person that triggers you and upsets you, and you say, "You are practicing the way of the Bodhisattva. In the future, you are sure to attain the way. I dare not hold you in contempt. You too shall become a Buddha." And then we could flip this around and ask ourselves, why is it so difficult to practice patience, kshanti? We can look at our own pride, at our own lack of understanding of what another person may be going through, at our own self-righteousness. And this leads to another important aspect of kshanti. And I say this tenderly because it's a path, a personal path of forgiveness for each person, if that is even something you want to take up. I remember reading, there's one point where I was just like, I don't understand forgiveness. I don't know what it means to forgive. And I started getting all these books on forgiveness, and people can tell you a lot about forgiveness. And one woman started her book off and she said, "Let me just start this off by telling you don't have to forgive anyone." And I thought, okay, I can read this. That's where I was at. Even this one. So, kshanti involves forgiving others for wrongs that they have done to us, real or imagined. But the practice of forgiveness must always begin with ourselves. And you might do, like we chant the four immeasurables, and, you know, for some of them, or all of them, or one in particular, we may have to fabricate it for a while. We don't feel it. We may not even want to say it, or it's hard to say, or we skip over, or we mumble. May all beings be in sympathetic joy. May I rejoice in the happiness of others. But we can make a kind of gatha of atonement for ourselves, put it in our own words. I wrote, "I forgive myself for all the harm I have caused to myself and others, either intentionally or unintentionally. I forgive others for all the harm they have caused me, either intentionally or unintentionally. I accept the forgiveness of others for all the harm caused by me, either intentionally or unintentionally." Kshanti is not passive. We discussed in that retreat all the things, well, some things we have to be patient about. How we are patient with something difficult. How are we patient in discomfort? In the discomfort we feel even when turning towards the Dharma. Patience to help us cultivate humility to work with being time, where we can hold the urgency and not get confined by it. That we see the discomfort or difficulty as the path. Face without fear the deep meaning of the Dharma, to have the patience to do that. To encounter our dark places. In the art practice, we worked last week with making love with dark, making love with darkness, or in praise of shadows, working with shadows, however a person wants to interpret that. Patience within our darkness. And I remember Dido called it going into the cave of the blue dragon, going into the forest of patterns clearly revealed. He says, when you're up against the wall, pressed between a rock and a hard place, lingering longer, pondering thoughts, overanalyzing and planning, holding back, feeling mired in fear and frozen in inaction. The patience to bring it to the path, advance fearlessly, finding empowerment in liberating thought and emotions. Here we find peace. He says, in the cave of the blue dragon, the way we function, what we're about, where we're sticking, what the buttons are, all the myriad forms of our routines and denials are evident. In the cave of the blue dragon, that's where we find out about ourselves. And it's in the cave of the blue dragon that the one bright pearl is hidden. The cave of the blue dragon, it's your blue dragon, and it's your one bright pearl. His verse says, each crisis, an opportunity. Yet if you fail to act, you miss it by 1,000 miles. The cave of the blue dragon is ominous. Only the fearless dare to enter. It is here that the forest of patterns is clearly revealed, the myriad forms evident. It is here that the one bright pearl is hidden. So we are in this boat together, crossing to the other shore together, always together. No one goes alone. But it's a solo journey in many ways. And we can bravely continue step by step, training in patience, forbearance, tolerance, endurance. And we will get discouraged at times and wish we could cross over sooner or cross over soon, but it's really on the spot. We get angry, we lose our patience, we atone, and our hearts open a little. We get frustrated and we blame others. We blame the other person. We say we're sorry. And our hearts open a little more. We acknowledge our own intolerance. And our hearts open even more. We want a situation to change in our life, but we have no control over it. We are humbled by the relentless honesty of living. And our heart opens a little bit more. This is just the point of Kshanti, the very best, very unsurpassable practice of patience. Just our hearts opening. That's it. Someone wrote, we have to remember to be patient, not to have expectations. Then one day we'll find ourselves understanding suffering, knowing its origins, observing it, and watching it end. This is the practice of the great compassionate Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. You, me, not someone else's practice, but it's yours and it's mine. Simply our own direct experience of our lives.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.